A friend of mine, a member of the temple, came in to see me the other day. He told me that he and his wife were celebrating their 40th wedding anniversary. I congratulated him, and in the course of the conversation, he told me that he had just run 10 miles for the fun of it. He does it, he told me, quite frequently. He wasn't out of breath at all, and he looked fit as a fiddle. He tried to interest me in one of those exercise machines whereby I would be able to run as fast as I wanted and as far as I wanted without moving away from one place, just by exercising my feet. I told him that I was of one mind with that college professor who used to say that every time he felt a real urge to exercise, he lay down until it wore off. Now, it's always to me very pleasant and surprising to learn of people who are able to defy the years so strenuously and who approach old age with such vigor, scorning the calendar so rakishly as did our friend. The Bible tells of a man named Caleb. He was one of the 12 men whom you may recall Moses sent to spy out the land of Canaan. And Moses promised him an inheritance because he was the only one of the 12 who brought back a good report of the land and encouraged the people, while the others brought back an evil report and discouraged the people. Caleb was 40 years at the time. 45 years later, at the age of 85, he came to claim his inheritance. And he said, and I'm quoting from the Bible, from the book of Joshua, "I am this day 85 years old. I am as strong today as I was in the day that Moses sent me. Gechochi oz, uchechochi oto, my strength now is as my strength was then, for war and for going and coming." And Joshua blessed him and gave him Hebron, the city of Hebron and its environs, for his inheritance. Now, there are Calebs today, septuagenarians, octogenarians, who are hale, strong, and active in their various callings and occupations. You and I can name quite a few who hold key positions of leadership in world affairs, who are in the 70s and in the 80s. In every community, you will find men whom advancing years have not forced into retirement, who carry on with energy, and competence, whatever work they're engaged in, or who give themselves to community service or national service with zest and wisdom and efficiency. Last week, Cleveland paused to pay warm tribute to such a man, to Mr. Nathan Dobie, an honored longtime member of our temple, a distinguished citizen, a leading merchant in our community, who at the age of 87 decided to free himself from his business connections and responsibilities and to devote himself exclusively to the numerous philanthropic activities and interests which embrace all creeds and all races, which have been dear to his heart all through his life. Everybody was proud of this indomitable man whom the years have not vanquished, who was taken along with him into the years of strength, into the 80s, a love of life, of man, of humanity, a sense of humor. Of such men, the psalmist said, they grow like a cedar in Lebanon. They bring forth fruit in old age. In the future, my dear friends, there will be more and more men and women who will reach the ages of 70, 80 or more, thanks to the progress which is being made by medical science, thanks to the abundance of food in our nation, and to a generally improved environmental conditions. Our people will be granted many more years to live. Unfortunately, these added years will come not in the middle of life, when our strength is at full tide, but in the second half of life, when our physical powers, by and large, begin to decline. If, say, 20 really youthful years, full of sap and vitality, could be added to our lives, what a boon that would be. But the additional years will be tagged on to an organism which has already passed its prime and has already begun to develop those inevitable infirmities which ultimately bring us down. To a degree, old age can be postponed. It cannot be permanently overcome. The only way I know of not growing old is to die young. This is the rub. This is what creates the many problems which confront a tenth of our population today. What to do with these, shall we call them twilight years? What can the individual do about it? What can society and government do to help the aged? Now, there is much thought being given today to these problems. It is generally acknowledged, for example, that our dependent aged are not receiving adequate public aid, by way of pensions or by way of medical care. Not enough is being done to give them greater security and to ease the burdens of their declining years. Many agencies and many professional minds are at work today studying the problems of housing and health and recreation and employment as they affect the older generation. Last week, a White House conference on the aging was held in Washington, and many important scientific surveys were presented, and many important recommendations were made. And I am confident that much progress in this field will be made in the future and in the near future, because both our people and our government, both state and federal, have become sharply alerted to these problems and are very sensitive and sympathetic to them. And this is long overdue. Ours has been a youth-oriented culture too long. The industrial age began the downgrading of the economic status of the older person, and consequently also of his social status. And our own highly geared technological age has sharply accelerated this process. A man of 50 has come to be regarded as occupationally obsolete. Some industries refuse to employ men of 45 or even 40. The old man was pushed aside in our speeded up civilization, and small provision, if any, was made for the working man whom industry rejected because of age. And of course, with the increase in economic dependency, with a decrease in his economic importance, there came about also a decrease in social status and dignity. Reverence for old age, which has been so much a part of older civilizations, has declined. A saying such as we find in our sacred books, Lifene seva takum, thou shalt rise up before the hoary head. Vihadarta pnei zaken, and thou shalt revere the old man. Such an admonition became quite incomprehensible to a generation which saw in old age only an impediment, a burden, and a rejection slip. When the economy of a nation can do without its aging citizens, why should men accept the biblical statement, Bishishim Chochmah, wisdom is with the aged, Beorach Yamim Tevunah, and understanding is in length of days. Fortunately, our age is turning away from these crude, brash, and cruel attitudes towards old age. We are rediscovering not alone our social obligations towards our aged, but the rich values which may be usefully exploited in old age for the common good. But But I want to speak to you this morning, not of what society or government ought to do for our dependent people, but what all men and women, should do for themselves in preparing for old age. Now, if I were a businessman, or if I were an insurance man, I could give you some advice on how to save your money and how to protect yourself financially in your old age. I do not know whether you would be safe in my hands, but I would give you that advice. If I were a doctor, I would advise you to eat sensibly, to watch your weight, to get plenty of sleep, and to have regular physical checkups. And I would talk to you about diet and calories and cholesterol and other such subjects which have converted our pleasant dining experience into an intricate problem in organic chemistry. But I'm not a businessman, I'm not an insurance man, I'm not a doctor, I'm a rabbi. And as a rabbi, I have seen in my lifetime many men and women financially quite sheltered and protected and visibly in good health who have reached old age empty-handed and find it quite bleak and desolate. They seem to be overtaken by an unspeakable boredom and by a feeling of utter uselessness. And in the closing years of their lives, they wonder where their life went to and what was it all about. They have retired on a comfortable income, but somehow they suspect that they have been shelved, and they are very lonely. They have no proud memories to sustain them in their old age. They had not cultivated any close friendships to sweeten their retirement. They were too busy to become actively interested in civic, in philanthropic, in cultural, or religious institutions and movements, which could now give them welcome opportunities to apply their talents and their experience and their leisure time usefully and pleasantly. They did not enter and explore during their active years the wonderful world of literature, of art, of music, if only as eager amateurs, only as lovers of what is true and beautiful. They somehow did not see this great world around them. Having their eyes focused, their mind concentrated on one thing, and so they reach old age, they reached old age empty-handed. I know of quite a number of elderly people who unconsciously discover ailments and infirmities and aches and pains in order to justify their empty and aimlessly drifting lives. And when they complain, "I don't feel so good," what they really mean is, "I really don't know what to do with myself." Now it is very hard, though not impossible, to begin a new career at 60 or 65 or even 70. I've known people who've done it. But no man, except for urgent economic reasons, ought to begin or should have to begin a totally new career in his old age. No man should ever have limited himself to only one career during his working years. Simultaneously with his business or professional life, a man should pursue other careers, a career of learning, a career of friendship, a career of citizenship, a career of service to his fellow men, so that when our business and professional days are over, we still have these other continuing careers to pursue. And then we will never be bored. We'll never feel ourselves useless. The important thing to remember is that it is when we are young that we should consider carefully what interests to cultivate so as not to consign our old age to barrenness and emptiness. It is too late to think of old age in old age. The time to think of old age is when we are young. Ashrei yalduteinu shelo bisha et ziknuteinu. Blessed is our youth if it did not put our old age to shame. All the wrong motives, all the false ambitions, all the fine things we shut out of our lives during our strong and creative years, all the noble pursuits and fine ideals we had no time for, these show up in their stark and hollow ghostliness as mocking apparitions, as it were, in our old age. A man who stores up during his young and masterful years, I do not mean storing up money or material possessions. That may be taken for granted. A man who stores up in his early years, interests of all kinds, intellectual and spiritual alertness and curiosity, a man who steadily sensitizes his mind and refines his tastes, who cultivates whatever talents he may possess, a man who makes warm friends and seeks out stimulating associations, who links up his life with the constructive social movements of his day, in his community, in his society. Such a man will never have difficulty in adjusting himself to old age, because he will not come to old age empty-handed. And he will never really retire There may be a change of pace, a change of emphasis. But there will always be work aplenty and never failing interests to pursue. For my good friends, one never stops learning if one has gotten into the habit of learning. And by learning, I don't mean technical knowledge necessarily, textbook knowledge necessarily, but the open mind, the questing mind, the mind that always seeking new knowledge, new truth, new information, new insights. One never needs to stop learning, and the capacity of people to learn does not vanish with old age. Nor are our spiritual resources diminished in old age. And learning keeps a man young. One never stops working in good causes if one has been in the habit of doing it. On the contrary, in old age, we have more to contribute of experience, of judgment, of guidance, of leadership. And one is never lonely in old age, unless he had never made real friends. But friendship must be earned, friendship must be achieved. Friendship must be worked for by a life of selflessness and profound regard for others. I do not speak here of the loneliness which comes from loss and bereavement. These, unfortunately, are beyond our control. They are the lot of all men and women. Blessed indeed and rarely favored are those men and women who go through their declining years with their life's companion by their side and their loving children about them. For there is never any loneliness. There is never any loneliness in love. But these things in many ways are beyond our control. I speak of the things which we can control. No one should think of old age as a time of retirement from active life or a time of abdication. Even the most economically dependent of old people can still make their lives useful in many ways, especially by helping others. As volunteers, for example, in our numerous welfare agencies in a community where there are so many people, especially in the older age bracket, who are in need of help of all kinds. No one is too poor to give. No one is too old to help. Government pensions, even when they are good and sufficient and adequate, cannot give dignity, purpose, and pride to the aged by themselves. It is only useful employment of one kind or another, participation in the active life of the community, that will banish the feeling of abandonment and uselessness from our dependent aged in their declining years. And so to sum up, my dear friends, in our old age we can only have what we really wanted and worked for in the first half of our lives. If we come to it empty-handed, the harvest years will be lean indeed. If, on the other hand, we have worked to store up plentifully, copiously, in our hearts and in our minds, in interests, in loyalties, in dedication to good things, then we will come to what the Bible speaks of, a seva tova. We will reach and enjoy, as far as it is possible for mortal men and women, subject to all the accidents of time and place, we will enjoy a seva tova, a good life.